My name is Christina Angelica, and I will be the moderator to panel number one. We will start by introducing each of the panelists. On panel number one, ladies and gentlemen, we are very honored to have the head of OCHTRA, Mr. Silviano Eddy. Welcome. Mr. Eddy graduated from University of Bridgeport, majoring in international business. In 2000, he served as a trade attaché and became the head of Asia's Market Development Center in Australia and New Zealand. Moving forward, he took the responsibility to head Bureau of Physical Market and Services and to lead the Center for Trade Policy Harmonization. Also here, in panel number one, we have the CEO of ICDX, Mr. Miguel Wijaya. Mr. Miguel Wijaya has been the CEO of ICDX since 2009, providing overall strategy and guidance for the exchange. He is an alumnus of Seattle University, graduated with summa cum laude. Prior to joining ICDX, Mr. Miguel Wijaya is the founder of Indonesia's largest integrated out-of-home media company called Alternative Media Group. He is currently the chairman of the company. My voice is deep, but because of my sore throat, it's even deeper. I'm so sorry. On this panel, we also have the CEO of GFX, Mr. Sherman Kresna. Mr. Sherman was previously the president director in Falguri Asia Securities for 12 years, which he then became the commissioner in 2012. He graduated majoring in economics and accounting from University of Indonesia called Trisakti. Last but not least, we have the vice president of Falguri Asia Securities, Mr. Miko Omar Jokir. Welcome. Mr. Omar has been managing funds on the Indonesia Stock Exchange for 15 years up to now. He was previously a lecturer at an international university in Bandung, Indonesia. Today, Mr. Omar is active in writing and appearing in TV news, educating public about trading. Can we give another round of applause for our first four panelists? Thank you for attending the conference. I would like to start this panel by giving each panelist the chance to introduce Indonesia, and in particular, Indonesia's futures market. Each panelist will have about 5 to 7 minutes, gentlemen. We will let the head of OCHTRA, Mr. Sukyone Eddy, to go first, and the chair is yours.
Thank you. Because my minister already talked about Indonesia and now in future, so I will not tell much more about the situation in Indonesia. I just want to say about the role of our institution. I'm chairman of Commodity Future Trading Trade Regulatory Agency in Jakarta. So my office is part of Ministry of Trade. As part of Ministry, I support the export of non-oil and gas also, because like my mentor said that we are the biggest exporter of coal, the biggest exporter of tin and other commodities like also seaweed and cocoa and coffee, they are number 5. So all the primary commodity we can export to other countries. So this is the role of our ministry, how to reduce the risk of price fluctuation by using the future market. So now we already prepare for this marine exchange. This passer on from Jeffrey and Megan from ICDA. We work together to support this export. So we create the spot market in the exchange for him, for Kukwa, and for the rubber. So we support them and give linkage with other countries also, because we have also more than 20 representative offices overseas, more than 19 and the Commission Center in overseas. We support also our acting by strategic police with other exchange. For example, we invite the CME group from US to come to Indonesia and meet with our exchange unit with Australian ASA to support Indonesia to have more collaboration with them. So our role is to facilitate but also to regulate. So we are now, we have a law number 10 in year 2011. And before that we have law number number 10 in 1997, sorry, law number 32. So we amended the law that is. So we have some regulation to support our team also. But we support the individualized the exchange. So previously, the exchange is non-profit organization, not with our regulation. We support the profit organization for the exchange. So we still make the government regulation to continue the flow. The other one, we also will establish the Association of Future Trading Industry. In the law, we have to establish this in, I hope, this year. So we have the strong organization can support the exchange also. And the other one is about the OTC, so we regulate also OTC in our regulation to have a more transparent of the OTC product. So we have new regulation that also supports them. On the other hand, we also support our farmers because I hope the exchange can be a preferred price for the farmer also. We have more than maybe 15 million farmers in Indonesia, and they depend on plantation of rubber, cacao, and other product. So they have to know the price fluctuation in the market, and they can maybe in the future hedge in the exchange. So we would like to also get share from other countries how to support the small and medium enterprise and also the farmer to participate in the exchange. So my initial already talked about the more than 250 million of our people, and the country we have a GDP more than 1 trillion. And we have more than 60 million consuming class in the middle class, so we have very potential. So we also support if you have a collaboration with our agents. I think.
We can then move forward to both exchanges, Mr. Reagan or Mr. Sherman. We can start with Mr. Reagan. On your views on the Asian
future. Well, thank you, Christy. Just to add some few points that Mr. Sotorno, Eddie, as our head, the chief of regulators here. In the past recent years, there have been a lot of breakthrough, I would say, regulations that help to shape the markets. One of them is probably the definition of co-commodities. Back then, in 1997, when the Act was founded, the definition of commodity used to be very narrow-based. Whereas, so in 2011, when there was an amendment to the overall Act, the definition of commodity has been broadened not to only include commodities, but also include other interests and also intangible assets. So this means to say that it further strengthens the positions of COFTRA here to regulate financial derivatives contract. And not only that, back in about 3 years ago, COFTRA made a new regulations that allows remote trader. So basically, traders doesn't have to be domiciled in Indonesia, but then they, although they can be domiciled in other countries, but they will be granted the access to the Indonesian market, so more like a direct market access here. And previously, foreign brokers, foreign ownerships on brokerage on SCMs are not allowed. But through the regulations of the new regulations that we have, we do allow foreign ownerships for FCMs. And coming from the exchange perspective here, one of the things that we see in the recent past 2 years, especially, I think that the market has changed dramatically. If you compare it to 5 years ago and you compare it to the last 1 year, we've been seeing a lot of changes, that rapid changes in the market. And one of the things that we notice as new exchanges in the region, we see that there needs to be a potential collaborations, be it with other exchanges or even more mature exchanges, in a way on how we could open up ourselves and create synergies between few markets. So one of the initiatives that we are going to take on this year from the exchanges are actually to try and create a collaborations with other exchanges or even clearinghouse. And we would like to thank the government of Indonesia as well for giving us the responsibility and the trust to actually execute the TIN markets. Previously, TIN has been traded in LME for more than 120 years. And TIN is such a strategic commodities for Indonesia because we supply more than 40% of the world supply. And it is a non-renewable materials. According to the data and statistics, TINs will only last for more than 10 years if we don't mine it in a sustainable way. So one of the initiatives that the regulators did with the exchange together with the government of Indonesia and Ministry of Trade in this particular instance is to create a mandatory decree saying that all TINs traded, all TINs ingots has to be traded through the exchange before it can exported out from Indonesia. The first 3 months was very brutal. We would say it was a turbulent supermarket. People, smelters don't really get the concept, but I mean, if you're persistent enough, you'll make it. And so we've been very glad to see the volumes of the TIN contracts picking up really fast. And basically what we did from the exchange and from the third party, for example, the surveyors and the warehouse, and we worked together to actually create a very much efficient delivery mechanisms so that everything is streamlined. And when the buyers and sellers, they meet up in the market and trade on the markets, everything is very much streamlined from the point of trades until deliveries. Well, I guess I'll just stop there because I'm sure that there are many things that we want to talk about from my other counterparts, and I'll continue later. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the GFX, as the first commodities exchange in Indonesia, took place in the 1999. And then back to the year 1990, in the midst of the booming of the stock markets, the Indonesia Stock Exchange, which was formerly operated by the government, then they went go private. The government, which was then performing commodity trades through the regulator, wanted to emulate the Indonesia Stock Exchange success in the futures trading market. But unfortunately, after the big crisis hit Indonesia back to 1998, after the law of in Indonesia regulator number 32, year 1997, on the commodity futures trading, they passed allowing for the creation of the exchange to the private sectors. that time, the government maybe don't have the financial means to establish these institutions consequently. And then the government approached the current share stakeholders of the Jakarta Futures Exchange, asking if they would contribute to the development of the Jakarta Futures Exchange, which was then formally founded in the year 1999. It means that it's around 13 years ago, yeah, 13 or 14 years ago from today. And then on the long way, yes, it's not that easy to develop the commodity futures trading, because our country is even though our country is like what the minister said, that we are the biggest exporters and producers for certain commodities, but the market is not here. The market is outside, in the buyer's market. So that's why, after so many years, there is no enough liquidity in our exchange. That's the point, that's the problem. So that's why, today, the government, through the COFTRA, our regulator, give the support very strong to the both exchanges. Just like what we can say, that they already supported by the regulators to enable team trade through the exchange. Maybe in the next, the regulators also will impose this regulation to another possible commodities, which is like coffee, cocoa, or coal. It's our dream as the exchange in Indonesia that one day soon we will become the price difference for the kind of oil commodities we trade internationally. Today, the price reference is still outside of Indonesia, like in the World CPO, I think, Malaysia, and then for the coffee from the light, from the London, and then from the cocoa, maybe from the ICE, and yeah, a lot of commodity price reference is not in the whole of the sources. Yeah, I think with the very strong support from the government, we will possible to make it that dream comes true. We hope, of course. Then, besides of the commodity, Indonesia also is a very big country for the stock market. And also the bond market. We have the market in stock exchange. The value of the transaction in the stock exchange for Indonesia is around 500 million dollars per day. Yeah, up to 800 million US dollars per day. This amount is not small. Maybe in Asia, Southeast Asia, we are number two after Singapore. Then, our government already issued Indonesian government bond for the amount of 2,000 billion. Oh, sorry. 200 million. 2 billion, right? 2 billion. Because in my head is Yes. In my head is in rupiah. In rupiah is about 2,000 trillion rupiah.
How many?
20 million, yes. Billion, you have done it, right? 20 million. Right? 20 million is the big amount of the government loan of Republic of Indonesia. And for those all the figures from the financial sector's market, actually until today, we don't have any place for hedging the position. Say, if the investor buy Indonesian government bonds, they buy it naked without any place to hedge the kind of loan. So that's why we are eager also starting to explore the possibility to make the Indonesian government bond futures. Hopefully, it can launch it this year. Hopefully. So, with all of the potential of Indonesia, we also hope that we get together with all of the participants here in the future, in the very short future, try to make a collaboration how to maximize the benefits, mutual benefits for the both parties between the overseas company and domestic company in Indonesia. And it's from the both exchange. And I think this maybe in a recent situation of the condition in situation in Indonesia.
Okay, good morning everyone. Although I've been here for almost 20 years in Indonesia, they still call me Bule. Chris, you know for sure what that means, right? That means foreigner, right? But a little bit impolite sometimes, you know. It should be asing, you know. But anyway, that's how we are called, you know, over here, you know. I'm not from the exchange. I'm not from the regulators. I'm from a futures company. So I will give you a fresh perspective on how people see the futures market in Indonesia. It's not easy. You can imagine, you know, it's a big country, but financial education, which I will talk about later on, is still lacking, you know, in Indonesia. The first thing, which is a problem over here, is a lack of knowledge. People here just don't know how to trade, how to enter the markets and so on, you know. For example, I just give you an anecdote, you know. I went to Palembang. It's a city in Sumatra. It's an older island. Don't worry. Many, many islands. Have you seen, you know, 7,000 islands over there, a lot over here, you know. I went to Sumatra. I had a seminar. And these people, they have been trading the futures market for a very long time, you know. So I thought by myself, wow, these guys are very, very smart, you know. So I started talking about technicals, about all kinds of things, you know, and their faces went like this, you know. Oh my God, what is this, you know? Technical analysis, you know. So they have been trading for years, you know, and they have never, ever heard about the chart, you know. Can you imagine? So, I mean, I thought by myself, what are they doing, you know? Then I asked them, you know, how do you trade, you know? How do you enter the market? Oh, we use our feelings, you know. Oh, that's great, you know. Yeah, so you can imagine, the people here, they are trading, you know, the market, they just lose their feelings, you know. And I guess that's not only an Indonesian problem, I guess also in your market, you often meet people who are trading like that, yeah, without any kind of knowledge, you know, they just enter the markets, you know. So that's the first problem, you know. Something that has been done by the JFX, I know that, maybe also in your countries you have that, it's called Pojok, BBJ, they call it in Indonesian. In English it's called a JFX Center. What is that? It's a center at the university where students can join, they get information about the futures market, and at the same time, companies who open a JFX Center, they can recruit people. Yeah? Because so far in Indonesia, it's very, very, very difficult to get qualified people. especially if you go outside Java. In Java, the main island, it's quite easy to find people. But if you go outside of Java, for example, you go to Sumatra, Kalimantan, and so on, it's very, very, very hard. Especially in Bali here, we also have a branch over here. It's very, very, very difficult to find people. If you can find 10 to 15 people in one office, well, that's great. You know? So that's the problem in Indonesia. Also, as you can imagine, it's still an emerging country, right? It is a big country. It has big, big opportunities, but it's an emerging country. So there is a lack of financial education still, you know. One of the things I think can be done in the future is, for example, put it as part of the curriculum. I don't know, Chris, whether you have it in your country or in other countries where you have financial planning, financial education for high school students. I don't know whether you have that. But I think if I look at Europe, in my country, in Belgium, for example, or if you look at the US, still many people are having problems with managing their own financial things, you know. So I guess that's nothing new. But I also heard in Indonesia, in some schools, they already have it as part of the curriculum. Yeah, even in high schools, right? Again, I think you know that, yeah? So it's starting to move now, especially in the better schools in Indonesia, you have financial education right now. Also, when you talk to people about the futures market, they just think the risk is too high. Probably because they don't understand what the futures market is. And I always say, listen, maybe you know the biggest investor in the world, right? Oh, yeah, they say Warren Buffett. Yes, great. And Warren Buffett, he ever said, risk is not knowing what you're doing. And that's basically it, you know? I mean, if you don't know what you're doing, of course, it's very risky. Yeah, if you look at someone who is climbing a mountain, yeah, just hanging over there, yeah, then you think, wow, this is very dangerous, you know. But he says, no, I've been doing this for years, you know, so I know what I'm doing. So this is it, you know, because they haven't been doing it a lot, you know. They think it's very risky. Just to give you an example, so you know what we're talking about. In Indonesia, the stock exchange, for example, right now, there are only 400,000 accounts. Can you imagine? 400,000 accounts out of a population of 250 million people. That means less than 0.2% of the Indonesian people are investing in the stock exchange. Yeah? Stock exchange, which is much easier to offer to people than the futures exchange. Yeah? So you can imagine what a hard job it is to get clients or to get people in the futures exchange. Even in the stock exchange, it's still very difficult. But I think it only takes time, you know. Right now, with the middle class expanding very, very rapidly, with a GDP per capita of around $3,200, it's starting to move now. Yeah, and I also heard from a director of the stock exchange, they are targeting 2 million accounts in the year 2017. So let's hope and pray that they can get that number of people. Once you get more invested in the stock exchange, I'm very sure it should be much easier to offer their products from the futures exchange. Also, one thing I see all the time in Indonesia is that people in Indonesia still prefer to put their money on a deposit account. Maybe in your countries, in your respective countries, you also have a problem where people are very conservative. Yeah, they are a savings society. Indonesia is a savings society. How to move the people and make them become an investing society? That is a very, very big problem. I don't know, maybe you can later on talk about this one, you know, but right now in Indonesia, it's still very, very difficult to convince people. There's so much money on deposit accounts. I think it's hundreds of trillions, if I'm not mistaken. So much money in a deposit account. They're just sitting there, you know. The banks, of course, are very happy in Indonesia because they make money all the time. That's why Indonesian banks are one of the strongest in the world right now, you know, because they have lots of deposits, you know. It's very easy to get money for them, you know. Also, if I look at my country, Belgium, for example, same thing, you know. In Belgium, I guess only 5% of the people, they are investing in stocks. Can you imagine? Belgians, we say, they are born with bricks in their stomach, you know. They just want to have a house. That's the first priority. We want to have a house, you know. And then the rest comes later, you know. In Indonesia, it's the same thing, right?
Yeah, about
And Indonesia, first we have a house, and then the rest we'll think about that later, you know. So I understand that. That's part of the culture, probably. It's a cultural problem, you know, to convince people to invest, you know. Okay, another problem that I see is that still many people in Indonesia, I don't know, maybe in your country you have the same problem, you know. If you talk about futures market, you know, it's like, what animal is that, you know? Right? They don't even know stocks, you know. What about futures, you know?
Yeah, man.
They just think, oh, it must be something like gambling, you know. Is that kind of casino, you know, they say, you know? Right? And then you have to explain to them, okay, gambling. Yeah, it depends on luck. Yeah, everybody knows that. But this one, you can analyze the markets. Maybe you can use fundamental analysis, you can use technical analysis. So it really depends on your skills and on your experience, you know, how you make money, you know. And talking about skills, you know, again, to find financial consultants is very, very hard, you know. If you don't have qualified people at futures companies, how can you offer? Or how can you teach people, you know? That's the problem over here, you know. Without financial consultants, they are the people in the front. They are the people meeting the clients, you know. And they are not very knowledgeable. If they are not very qualified, of course it's very difficult, you know, to find clients. Again, that's a problem, you know. We are struggling with this one on an ongoing basis. Also, because Indonesia is the biggest Muslim country, whether you know it or not, is the biggest Muslim country in the world, because around 90 to 95% of the people here in Indonesia are Muslims. In Bali, you won't see that, because they're Hindus, right? But if you go to Java, Sumatra, Kalimantan, and the outer islands, most of them are Muslims. So, oftentimes, they ask questions like, is this legal? Is this halal? Halal, that means according to the Sharia principles, the Muslim principles, you know. Even when you talk about stocks, they ask these kind of questions, you know, especially in the outer islands, you know. People are quite religious, and for them it's a very, very, very big concern, you know. Now in the stock market, you have a kind of index, it's called Islamic index, you know. So for them, it's already safe. And in futures, it's still sometimes a little bit of a problem. But we just have to explain to them, you know, that it's just okay, you know. Another problem. Yeah, people are very conservative. So another question they always ask, you know, are my funds safe, you know? Yeah? Is it okay, you know, if I put my money in the company, they won't run away with it? Why do they say that? Because in Indonesia, there's still many, many companies, sometimes from abroad, sometimes locals, you know, who have kind of practices which are not really legal. Yeah, so, I mean, that problem you often have, you know, I think in your countries maybe it's the same thing, you know, where you have companies, you know, they're in the gray zone. Yeah, so it's not really clear what they are doing, you know. But we always tell them, you know, don't worry, your money is put on a segregated account, it's not mixed with funds from the company and so on, so your money is safe over there. But when you get proof, they say, of course you get proof, you know, because now everything is online, so you can just see, you know, how much money you have. Your equity is moving all the time, just look at it, and then you see, you know, you can find out. So it's very transparent nowadays, also in Indonesia, you know, with online trading. Another problem, which was mentioned by Eddie, is the price dissemination, you know, in Indonesia. It's still very problematic. It could be improved. And when I did my research, I found something very interesting, you know, about price dissemination. For example, in India, and I'm sure Mr. Vijay Kumar can attest to this one, he's from the National Commodity and Derivatives Exchange, they have installed a ticker, I found out, with a real-time price for commodities at the villages in India. Can you imagine? So even in the small villages, you know, they can see the prices. Of course, farmers will be much more interested when they see the prices real time, you know. Yeah. And I'm not saying that they're going to trade all the time, but at least they can find out, you know. If, for example, the price goes up, okay, I'm going to sell my stuff, you know. If it goes down, maybe I keep it for myself for the time being. So this is very, very interesting, you know. Even in the little villages, farmers have access to information, which is very important. In Indonesia, I think, still lacking this kind of information. So if you don't have information, people don't know about the exchange, of course they will not trade, you know. So this is a very, very important point. And I think in India, they've done a very good job for this one. Also in China, In China, the commodity exchange has been teaching farmers how to read and interpret futures prices. Again, you know, if farmers understand how to read a chart, for example, yeah, where the price is probably going, if they can find out what they should do, where they produce, it's much more interesting for them, you know. Yeah, so they know what to do. And also in Brazil, I found something very interesting. Banco do Brasil has provided a farmer's room. It's also interesting, you know, a farmer's room at the main branches of agricultural banks in the little villages. So farmers, they have a special place for themselves. They can go over there, have a look at all the prices of the agriculture products, you know, to find out themselves, you know, what is moving right now. And then last but not least, this is something for the government. I think the government, of course, has to support the exchange, you know. And how can they do that? Well, in order to attract farmers, producers and exporters and also importers, I think it's very important to give them incentives, you know. Without incentives, they won't trade. They won't participate in the market. That's for sure, you know. And one thing they could do, in my opinion, is tax incentives, you know. It's very important, you know. Because in the end, it's all about money, right? Money does push you walks, we say. People, they won't trade. In Indonesia, when they don't have incentives, why do they trade in London? Why do they trade in Malaysia? Why do they trade in Rotterdam? Why do they trade in Australia, for example? Yeah. Why live in Indonesia? That's also a question we also ask, you know, all the time, you know, to the government, you know, why? It's not only about taxes, I know, it's also about trust, it's also about liquidity, it's also about spreads, it's also about other things. But I'm sure you know the exchanges together with the government, they will have to find out how to make the exchange in Indonesia especially much more attractive in the future. Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you for your view on Indonesia and Indonesia futures market. Of course, me and all the audience here, we have a lot of questions regarding Indonesia. Gentlemen here talk a lot. Questions are for later, and I will. Yeah, I will. Please state your name and your institutions you're from, but. If I may, can I ask a question first as a moderator, and we can go next. I'm so sorry. This is the scenario that I built.
You ask the first question.
I'll ask the first question, right? Okay. The exchange from the regulator and from the teachers also, broker, state a lot about education. And yes, we know, as what the minister said, that also, and also the regulator, Mr. Sudarno Edi, he said a lot of lack of education. Well, the plus point of, it's not all problems, right, Mr. Nico, that we, Indonesia is a land of abundance. We're a producer country, of primary and strategic commodities. Well, my question is maybe to the regulator, to the exchange, and to the futures, how do you see, because lack of knowledge, should we say, it's not only to the academics. It's more to the farmers, because we're a commodity-based country, and we haven't reached to that point where all farmers and all producers know about the organized market that we have built in Indonesia. So maybe first to Mr. Sudarno Edi, maybe we can have a little bit of your plan and strategy on how to develop this education for our Indonesian people. Yes.
Thank you. I think we have to work hard because, as you know, we have more than 150 million people, and I'm probably our people only 40 more. More than 40% have bank account. So we have to increase the literate of financial literate of our people. So this problem, because the future market is not simple transaction, it's sophisticated instrument. So we have education from not only farmer but for the middle and upper class. So we work together with our political the ministry and also with the team, so they have make an education together with them. So we also educate the broker and also the community and also through socialization in the campus. And the other one, we also give information about the price every day of cocoa or other palm oil rather by using a TV. Because many of Indonesian people like watching TV. So we put them the price every day at a TV. And also we also support for the brokers to put their community there. So they have to provide, I mean the brokers have to provide brochures and other information about the community. So this is one of our regulation to our brokers. And yeah, we think that also we open to cooperate with other exchange to educate our people also, because some other countries also would like to come to Indonesia to have some presentation and other means of education to disseminate about the future market.
Does any exchange or Mr. Nigan want to comment?
Well, I guess, talking about commodities, yes, of course. We're sitting in the heart of commodity centers. But getting a commodity contract is not easy. 85% of our time, whenever we create a contract, very much we spend most of the time, sorry, 85% of trying to get the deliveries right. Because sitting in a commodity smart centers, but then if your contract is a cash settled contract, then it does not make any, it doesn't bring benefits. So the point here is that whenever you create a commodities contract, it has to be a physically delivered contract. Why? That it creates a convergence between the futures market and the spot market, as we all know. And, of course, when you come to Indonesia, one of the problems that we have is also logistic issues. For more industrialized crops, for example, like palm oils, debugging stations, the ports are very much advanced, and the way they think are much different between those farmers that are doing cocoa or coffee. This is the way we see it. Because for palm oil, for example, one of the most successful crops in the world, they're very much industrialized, integrated from the upstream to the downstream, and they even have the infrastructures that help that can easily be integrated with the exchange contract. But then if you look at cocoa and coffee in Indonesia, most of the producers are small stakeholders. And it's funny in Indonesia that more of the trading companies, the bigger ones like Cargill, ADM, the ABCs, ADM, Bunge, Cargill's, they directly buy from the farmers, which we find it a bit strange. But of course, that's how they make the money. They make the margins. And that is why, although we have so many commodities in Indonesia, we personally believe that not all commodities are ready to be transacted. I think you've heard the recent bans on the minerals that happened from Indonesia on last January. They said pretty much that all raw minerals cannot be exported in a raw or crude forms. But then the next question comes, okay, if you cannot export in raw materials or raw forms, what kind of forms that it should be? And the government has not been able to answer, because really only certain commodities actually have been standardized. And if we're talking in the futures market, everything has to be standardized. It cannot have different qualities when it comes to delivery points. So probably one of the most successful one will be tin. Why? Tin has its own specifications. It needs to be in good forms, and the purities and the impurities are all actually outlined in the contracts. I just found out from my friend who is a trader in London. He said, again, do you know that your country produces the world's largest bauxite? I said, really? Yes, that's the truth. But then, you don't have a standardized form of bauxite or red nickels. And truly, this is will be a challenge for the market. And of course, it creates an opportunity for the exchanges as well to actually work along together with the government, says that, look, this is the forms, or this is the end products, or even semi-end products that will come up from Indonesia, and we'll trade it from at the exchange. So, in terms of commodity space, and how the exchange could position itself, the exchange should position itself as a conduit, as a marketplace, really, to meet with the foreign buyers and the domestic sellers. And we really hope to see that thing coming in. Of course, given the right infrastructures, given the right arrangement, then Indonesia could really become the center of commodities. Especially if you look at the statistics, we're probably at least top three of all the commodities that we trade. I guess that would be just additional.
Okay, not running away from your topic just now about tin. We know that tin, as one of the product in ICDX, have reached its successful point, though not yet the price reference, but we have, ICDX have reached to the point where a lot of our producers here do reference to ICDX for the tin price. So my question to Mr. Megan Wijaya, what was the challenges faced as an exchange to gather all of the producers and of course the buyers to trade on exchange?
All right, I mean, I would have to argue with you that if you said that we're not in the price conference, I would have to argue with you that
it's actually already is.
Because when we launch the contract, it's not really a challenge. We don't position ourselves as a challenge to the LME. We believe that there could be two markets that could exist, and there could be a potential even arbitrage in those two markets. What makes the fundamental difference between LME and ICDX is that the government creates a sovereign guarantee on the qualities of the tin, whereas LME is just an LME brand. I mean, they have to be audited for 2 years, they cannot have defaults, and they have certain specifications. But the government, through the decree of the Minister of Trade, actually stipulates what kind of things has to be traded on the exchange. So it is really a sovereign guarantee, and everybody is enforceable for everyone to adhere to the decrees. I was having a discussion with one of the world's biggest traders, and they told them, but some of these brands are not LME brands. And we argued, look, that is not the point. The point here is that every tin that comes up from Indonesia is an Indonesia highest quality tin. And this is actually guaranteed by the government, and of course by the clearinghouse. Well, in the past 3 weeks, we have made observations on the tin price. The sellers have agreed not to sell below $22,000 per ton. And this is really because they need to cover for the reclamation fees, investment in new missionaries, maintenance of their heavyweight machines, and of course exploration. And they said, only at this price, then we are only able to sell the tin price. And what we saw the past 3 weeks, the LME has tested the market by driving down the prices to about 22,000. So there is actually a spread between Indonesia tin price and LME price of about $1,000 per ton. But then since Indonesia at that price, look, we're not going to sell it at that price. We're still going to sell it at 23,000. And true enough, the world market, what they say, the LME price, then came back up to the 3,000. And one of the interesting observations that we made during the 3 weeks as well, especially running regression data for the past 5 years, we saw that before ICBX was launched, the volatility of the markets can range up until 30% within a month. But ever since Indonesia created the TIN market, we see the volatility has been reduced to only 5%, which we believe has achieved what the government wants, in a way that we don't expect high prices. I mean, I believe that the TIN smelters have no intention to make an arbitrarily high prices because there's a freeze in our shock supply. Because we argue with them as well. If you are going to make an arbitrarily high prices on the TIN market, then it will create an opportunity for other countries who maybe in the past doesn't see it as a commercial viable, then they'll start mining their tins. And then all of a sudden you will see an influx of different tin rigs from other countries. And of course, as an electronic producer, then when the tin price gets too high, then you will say, look, maybe we should do synthetic solderings for all the electronic parts. We don't see any benefits of using tin. Then we're losing the advantage of having a tin market. That's it.
I believe because also TIN's regulated, it's more to, of course, the COFTRA, and all the regulatory bodies, the support.
Well, it definitely has the support of the market. It creates an instant liquidity. For example, in the past 5 months, we have successfully recruited 20 members of TIN, very big one, and they actually represent 85% to 90% of the world, of the Indonesian productions. And we're very much glad that we actually see some of the LME members coming into our market. And I think this is one of the ways we internationalize the
Another question maybe to Mr. Chairman. So as GFX has been 30 years in Indonesia as a futures exchange, so we would want to know what is the opportunities and challenges you see in the next 5 years, 3 to 5 years?
Yeah. The opportunity, of course, is there. Because at what we talked just a moment ago to the Minister of Trade, yes, Indonesia is one of the biggest potential country for the commodity producers. So the opportunity is very big in Indonesia. The problem is only, like what Mr. Nico says, that really the people in Indonesia which literate for this kind of the business is very small. Not even to 1% from the total population, you know. So basically, as our fellow from the TMA, when they came to Jakarta, meeting with us, they said that the key is only one thing: keep educate the people. That's the key, the main key of the how to develop the successful commodity products in the future sector. And based on that, we from the GFX put quite a big budget to develop the education sectors and policy in our exchange. We do a cooperation with some of our members. Now we have already 10 Pojok Bursa, or GFX centers in all over university, spread in big cities and university in Indonesia. And also we have experience with the farmers of the rubber. producer. The farmers is a very basically the farmers is come from the remote area. They don't even know what is the trading system and then how to log in the user ID or the password. They don't know anything about it. That's our duty to come to the center of the producers of the rubber, the people, to teach them and then to invite them and also to encourage them how to use the technology of the information. We know that this is a very difficult job, but we have to go through this. We cannot just stay in the office and then we hope that the business will come easily. No, we have to come to the center of the producers to make them know how to do, what to do, and then what is the advantage if they know the technology to trade through the online trading system. Even though they stay in a very remote area, as what just Mr. Rico says, like India, they can update it, the price, time to time, every day. And basically also our government here is already have the system called the warehouse receipt. Warehouse receipt is a very useful system actually. So in one area, let's say the center of the corn products. When the harvest time coming, the supply is abundantly and very much, you know, flooding the market. Then normally when the supply is very big, the price will drop. Then this warehouse receipt system, they allow the farmers to put the products to the warehouse which is already registered through the KBI. And then the receipt can bring to the bank and then can get the very soft loan with a very low interest. I think this kind of system also enable to help the farmer from the disaster down pricing when the harvest time coming. And then another problem is how to give the understanding to all of the government people about what business can be taken from the futures exchange. You know? It is also not a simple thing because like in the Malaysia or Kuala Lumpur, I believe that all of the household wives and then all of the retirement, they know very well about the price of the CPO because CPO is already like in Indonesia maybe like a gold price. They know very well. Every way up in the morning, they will ask, "Hey, how much is the price now?" They have a big curiosity to this kind of commodities. That's what we want to make it in Indonesia. For the cocoa, for the olive, for the coffee, yeah. This is what we have to do, how to make the price dissemination quite spread out. And then also the trader, the role of the trader, also very important. Unfortunately, trader in Indonesia, like what we can say, that they are very get used to the cash settlement. They don't want to see the complicated thing like the forward, option, future, whatever. Basically, in Indonesia, they like the cash settlement. Okay, I sell this product to you, and then how long is the due date of the loan? Maybe usually they give maximum three months, but the product already delivered to them. And then after 3 months, they will receive the money. That's ready, clear, right then. Meanwhile, the role of the exchange is more sophisticated than that. We can do forward, we can do option, we can do future. Actually, they also can get the advantage from our exchange if they know and they understand the mechanisms how to trade through the exchange. So our target is common from the sources of the product, and then our people, and then the student of the university also is very important because they are the future generation of us, the student of the university. And then also maybe this one is very important. We have 65 member broker, but I don't see the background from this our member broker, which already have the experience in the community. Mostly they very familiar with the financial, but they don't know much about the community. This is also a big challenge for us to invite our member broker to do more actively marketing and socialize this commodity products, you know. Because in GFX, we have 5 commodity products, like cocoa, coffee, olive, gold, and soot, and then rubber physical, and CPO physical, and also soon we will have coal physical. So this kind of opportunity should be also can do by our member. Then I know that the authorities already push them very hard. Even they given the target for 5% for their all of the transactions must go to the community. But also this one also needs quite more forcing, yeah. Because as I told you, even though we have a 65 member brokers, they are not so familiar about this kind of commodity exchange. I think that's what would be the challenge and the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Sherman. Maybe it's just for me, but I always like how authentic you are with your English. It's very authentic. And I talked to Mr. Sherman a lot, and he really knows a lot about the exchange. And maybe I don't want to prolong my questions, though I have a lot of questions ahead, but I would get to the floor and to the audience. If you have any questions, please state your name, the state your institutions you're from, and to whom you're addressing your questions to. Thank you.
My name is Paul Meyer. I'm happily retired, but still interested in the industry, and especially, of course, AFM is very close to my heart. I rather have a comment rather than a question to a specific person. It's just when Nico said we need to deliver incentives, I think there's only one incentive to the market, and that becomes part of the value chain. Cash markets and futures markets have to align, I think, the same way. And I think that's where it's important. Too often, futures come in and think they will do the job. It has to reflect the cash market. And the cash market has to be realigned in a way that you can have a future. And I think Christian will talk about it tomorrow. He has been doing an excellent job in Malawi, trying, before you even think of doing this, try to get the cash flow to the point where it needs to be, so you can use it. And then that's the best incentive to become part of the value chain. And the other thing that I think is very important is education. You all talk about education. But I think the important thing is education is really the same thing by all of you. By your combined forces. Rather than you do this, that, do that, that, do that. It's very costly education. And yet it's the thing it has to do. Why not combine? Do it like the US, option industry council. The only thing you should do is rather than the US is options and futures, and you have to fight each other. One thinks the other one is better. That's ridiculous. It's one product. So put together, have a derivatives institution in Indonesia where COFTRA, NJFX, NICDX, and the government puts in a little money, and then it can have a big push. Because then it also, the advantage there is it's not a sales pitch by ICDX, it's not a sales pitch by the other ones, it's the product. I think that's something to consider, to combine forces and do the education together. But that's the basis for everything, like Nico said properly.
Thank you. That was a very good input for the exchange, the regulator, and also the future program. Does anyone else?
The old men have got to ask questions first because we can't concentrate for too long. My name is Rod Blondin. I now work for my grandchildren. A direct question to you, McGain. The geographic complexities of your country are just outstanding for us. How do you manage with regard to, for example, introducing a contract? Do you introduce different contracts for different islands, or do you have some type of mechanism to deal with the transport logistics?
Right, thank you. Oh, that's a very difficult question. So, for example, for Indonesia, we have a central commodity. So, for example, for palm oil, it's very much originated in the Sumatra Island. And when we look at the contract, we really differentiate if it's going to be a locally delivered contract or the FOB contract. So, for FOB contract, then we look at the statistics. How much volumes are coming out from the top, let's say, top 3 ports? So we're going to take these 3 ports. So for example, and for crude palm oil contracts, then we're looking at Pelawan, which is in Medan, North Sumatra. Then in Dumai, which is somewhere centered around the middle of Sumatra Island. I wish I had the map, but I can show it to you. So basically, given that these two main ports are the majority port where all the CPO gets shipped out, so we pick this as the basis. We pick this as a basis of the contracts. So we call this an FOB Pelawan, FOB Dumai contract. But then if we have, because of this first of the geographic locations, supposedly if we are going to have another contracts which is get delivered, for example, in Kalimantan, which is also what you call Borneo, as a part of the delivery points, then what we do typically is that we create another contract, or we build in a discount to represent displacement from the main ports to the other ports. That's typically how we do it. And it's interesting, although we have so many commodities, but then it tends to get centralized. For example, for the coffee and cocoa bean. For coffee and cocoa bean, Makassar, right?
Yes,
Makassar, which is in Sulawesi, Salabes.
South Sumatra
as well. Yeah. So the commodities tend to be clustered in certain areas, and that actually makes it easier. Whereas in Java Island, we don't really have much crops that grows in this. In this island because of the density of the populations. But then we have a lot of refiners. For example, sugar refiners, palm oil refiners. So again, depending on the contract. If it's a commodity-based contract, it tends to be clustered in certain cities, in certain very much big ports. And for other cities, not so much. For tin, for example, will be in Baka Island, which is an hour away from Singapore. So for tin, it's very unique. It sits on this island, and pretty much it's the only island in Indonesia that produces perhaps 90% of the tin productions.
Thank you. Into the floor, yes.
Irek Mazur, Warsaw Stock Exchange Group. I have two questions and one comment. If I may, the first question is to Vijaya. Vijaya, the question is easy. Could you tell us how the ICDX shareholder structure looks like? The second question is to Nico. Please tell us how the exactly governmental tax supporting is in Indonesia. And one comment to Nico too. So the fundamental analysis and technical analysis is so important, I agree with you. But the prices on the market always follow after the feeling of the market and the spirit of the market.
In Indonesia, the shareholding structures for both exchanges are privately owned, so it's not owned by the governments. And the principles that govern, according to the regulations, that there needs to be a minimum of 11 shareholders. And it used to be that they have to be equally owned, but because of the Demutualizations Act back in 2011, so it creates an opportunity for other shareholders to come in, strategic shareholders to come into the pictures, so that it creates more diverse ownerships. And I think both of the exchanges are currently we're open for strategic investors. And in fact, it can actually also be a foreign investors as well, according to the regulators' regulations. Typically, the shareholders of the on the exchanges is very typical for producers, FCMs, funds, or even IT companies.
Okay, thank you for your question about taxes and so on. Number one, I'm not from the government, as I told you before. Number two, I'm a foreigner, so it's very sensitive to talk about taxes, in another country, so I apologize. I think this question is best answered by someone from the government, right, by Lee? Maybe you can give some more explanation about tax incentives or anything that has to do with taxes. Thank you.
Under the Ministry of Finance, but up to now there is no incentive of tax for people trading in the future exchange. So, but we try to get comparison with other countries. Maybe in the future we try to find what kind of incentive for the people or the company transaction in the.
If I can continue to Mr. Sotrano Eddie's, basically we are currently drafting what we call the final tax proposal. So typically if you trade and if you have capital gain, then it will be self-assessed at the end of the year. So what Indonesia has been trying, together with the industry, together with the regulators as well, we're trying to introduce what we call the final taxations on an income basis. So it will be taken from a per trade per lot basis, but then it's going to be very small. So the propositions that we have right now is actually 0.01% of 1% of the notional value of the contract. And this will be actually applied for all the contracts that will be traded on the exchange. And we believe that this will actually create more volume to the exchange. Thank you.
May I add one
more?
I think this we should learn from the other countries about the tax incentive given by the government to the exchange. I don't know, maybe we can share later to give the proposal to the government. Because in Indonesia, the tax, of course, and this under the Ministry of Finance. Meanwhile, now we are under the Ministry of Trade. So this is the two different ministries in Malaysia. And then it is a cross-joint decision between the two ministries, which is not easy in Indonesia. But I think in the future, we will try how to get the tax incentive, not deep from the experience from any other country, or India, or China, or wherever. So I think the second question is for you.
Thank you so much, gentlemen, and we are now done with our panel one. Please give a round of applause again for our first
Thank you very much for that discussion. I'm sure there's going to be lots more questions, and we certainly want to break for our coffee break, but before that, we are going to then capture the signing of that MOU that we've spoken about earlier. If you could just hang on, gentlemen, thank you very, very much. If you don't mind, we've got a small gift for you. Thank you very much for that. Let's give them a round of applause.